Welcome to this week's episode of The Wagon with myself, John McKeown, psychotherapist, and the wonderful actress, Finty Williams. This week, we're really thrilled to welcome Denise Welch on.
Hello.
Who's prolific in many, many ways. So Denise is a mother with two children, actress, writer, bestseller, I should add, broadcaster, and the winner of Celebrity Big Brother, which couldn't have been any mean feat.
Oh, and that was 3 weeks out of my life. I'll never get back, but never mind.
But it was great entertainment for a lot of us.
I'm sure it was.
And maybe we'll touch on some of those dynamics, maybe. And you've talked a lot about your depression and your sobriety, and you're celebrating 8 years very, very soon.
Yep.
So we'll come back to that.
Thank you.
And you also have a new book coming out, which we want to plug because it's, of course, relevant to what we're talking about today, The Unwelcome Visitor.
Which is how I refer to my depression.
Your depression, which is an amazing, having worked and suffered with depression for many years myself. It's an amazing title, isn't it? Because that's what it is.
Well, we were either going to do The Uninvited Guest or The Unwelcome Visitor, because I've referred to them as both, but we went for that because that's very much how I see it, and how people have related to me when I've talked about it in public and on social media. It's helped people by making a character out of their out of their illness. And I've talked about how when I can feel it's coming, and you know, there's been times when I've been about to go out in public or go on stage and I've felt the unwelcome visitor making an appearance, and how I deal with that. And so the book came as a result of me posting an episode of depression last year, 2019, in September, which wasn't planned. It was a total impromptu, impulsive thing to pick up my phone and post a milder episode than I've had. So that I've spent 31 years trying to talk about this condition and trying to explain it. But for people to see it in real time seemed to provoke a response that was quite overwhelming. And as a result of that, the book.
But I just wanted to say, one of the reasons that we so wanted you to be here is because I think you're one of the most honest people that I've ever, first of all, had the pleasure of calling a friend, but also been aware of, in the way that you speak about addiction, the way you speak about depression, and it's so inspiring. And I watched those videos last September, and I thought of all the people who must have been watching it going, that's exactly what I feel like.
That's what it is. And it's not me trying to say, like, the sort of subtitle of the book is going to be Depression and How I Survive It, not Depression and How to Survive It, because I'm not equipped to tell anyone how to survive it. But like you've just said, they can relate to me talking in layman's terms about this illness, and that's what helps them. So I'm not saying do this and you'll get better, because we know that's not going to happen. Yeah. It's how to survive it.
It's your journey. So before we get into the nitty-gritty, I just want to thank our sponsor, who is Beatha Calm. It's a residential clinic specialising in addictions and mental health. Without their support, this podcast wouldn't have been possible. And you can find out more about them at beathacalm.com.
I really wanted to talk to you because there are very few women who are willing to come forward and talk about the impact that being an alcoholic has had on their family life. Because I think, I don't know whether you agree with me, but I think there's still such a stigma attached to a woman, especially bringing up children, and then suddenly when those children are 8, 9, 10, whatever they are, going, actually, I have this problem.
I completely agree. And I think getting sober, there were several years that I suppose I myself was in denial about the impact that that may have had on my family. Because we all know that when we drink, if anybody tries to tell us that we're alcoholics, they're the people that get the wrath, that get our anger, and that, you know, the people closest to us are the ones who want us to stop the most. So I felt so incredibly proud of myself when, with my husband, we both gave up alcohol together 8 years ago. I almost, it was like, well, look at me. I've made such a difference to your lives now that I'm sober. So let's please not reflect on anything that I did or said when I was drunk. Let's not talk about them. And if anybody does, I shall be very, very angry. Yeah. And it's been quite interesting because I have, as you know, Finty, a wonderful and very close relationship with my family. By my family, I mean my sons, my husband, my late mum, my dad, my sister. But all of those people were affected by my drinking. And Matty and I have a very close relationship. Obviously, we are separated a lot of the time because he's now a global rock star saving for my retirement home, which is great. But he has voiced some of the things that he's very proud of me. He's, you know, he loves me dearly, and I shouldn't have to say that, but I kind of do, because he has voiced some things that really did affect him when he was a child. And I pushed back a little bit and got quite defensive. But then I've had to do a lot of work on myself, with some help, John, as well, you know, with therapy, but a lot on my own, of how I had to come out of denial that my thing, because, of course, a lot of the things I couldn't remember because I was drunk. I also think that I try to dispel the myth as well, as a mother, as you are, that I wasn't getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning and reaching for the vodka behind the fairy liquid and drinking it throughout the day. That wasn't that, you know, I managed to raise two children and go to work and stuff. It was almost like I was living two separate lives, my sort of London life and my home life. And I didn't really go down the AA route. And I think that's because I had an anchor in Lincoln. That's how we got sober together. But I know how much it helps other people. But when I did go, they said that, you know, being an alcoholic is when you become powerless over alcohol, whether that's drinking once a month or every single day. Mm. And of course, that was just what was happening to me. And I was masking my depression, my clinical depression. And also, I think I was masking the breakdown of my marriage, you know. But I started drinking to try to deal with my clinical depression. That's how mine started.
It's funny, John and I were talking this morning and we were saying, you know, in inverted commas, normal people get up and they say, oh, I've got X, Y and Z to do today. Oh, I tell you what, I might just take something that's going to slightly jeopardise my life at the beginning, or it's going to make me irresponsible or not great. Normal people don't do that.
No, they don't.
But we were saying, you know, it's when your brain can't quite comprehend something or deal with a hurt that you go, I have to mask this with something
Even
else.
If it's temporary, I would know the effect that drink and drugs for a time were having by exacerbating the mental health problems, serious mental health problems, because I had severe depression. But the desire to stop the pain of my clinical depression at its worst was so extreme that I knew I was compounding it, but the temporary relief was more powerful.
Worth the risk as well.
The risk, even though I knew the next day would be 10 times worse. It's like with suicide, I say to people that, you know, people who take their own life don't often do it because they want to die. They want to stop the pain. Mm. And it's the ultimate way of stopping the pain. Mm. And I think that one of my reasons why I've spoken out about depression for so many years when other people weren't, because I very much was a lone voice 31 years ago when it happened, when I had Matty, was to try and highlight the difference of depression as something that is a normal reaction to something. So, you know, when my beloved mother died 8 years ago, I know you've lost a parent, Finty.
Yeah.
I was emotionally traumatized and grief-stricken and bereft, as any daughter would be losing their mother. But I didn't get my depression. Whereas 2 years ago, sitting in the Caribbean with the waves lapping over my feet and a palm tree there, I got an episode of my depression, which is endogenous. It comes on from often no reactive situation whatsoever. And it's trying to describe to people who still don't understand that this is a very serious illness. And when you have that so badly, sometimes the only way to stop the pain is with alcohol and drugs. And that's what I did for years. Do I have regrets and wish I'd stopped earlier? My God, do I. Don't believe in this don't have regrets. I really do have regrets.
Do you mind talking about the drug side just a little? Or if
no, I don't. I don't. I started with that, with cocaine.
Right.
And it's a real terrible word in the media as well, you know. Mm. But, and I thought, I got such a terrible time when I was hacked by the papers. And that word, that cocaine word, took over my life the way that the press used it. And it was horrendous. And so I kind of, I would only then talk about my alcohol problems. But it, to be honest to myself, I have to talk about that as well. And it started really when I was doing Coronation Street, so my, which is 20 years ago now. So my work schedule was intense. My child was 9. And my depression was so bad, I had 2 nervous breakdowns whilst I was doing Coronation Street and was trying to work through them. To the point that I was getting up in the morning, the depression was so bad, getting up at 5, as we know, for filming. And I was crawling on my hands and knees to the toilet, making myself vomit. Because by making myself be sick, I was trying for the 10 seconds of being sick to try and take away the pain that was in my head. Which is why I understand the horror of self-harming. I didn't ever go to that extreme, thank goodness. But it gave me an indication of why people are so desperate to find a release, that, that they would go down that road.
It's also a visible, with people who self-harm, I've often heard them say that when they see blood, they can see that their body is getting rid
purging,
of something.
Getting rid of something. And it was so awful. And although I was speaking out publicly, even in a sort of lesser way, because we didn't have social media and it was all newspapers and I wasn't doing Loose Women and all of those type of things. So my audience was smaller of people to speak out to, or at least not as visual. I was still privately not understood. So, you know, if you're that poorly and you say, if somebody goes into work in a filming thing where nobody can stand in for you, that's the thing. It's not like being Sue, who works in the computer industry, where Joan can take over from her if she doesn't go in. Not that I'm saying that that's any less an important job. I'm just saying that, you know, that you have stand-ins in working in a soap opera or in a drama. You don't. And so to go in and say, I've got depression, there was like, not from my true friends in there, but there's like a, well, we've all got depression, Dan. We're all depressed about something. But if you go in and say, I've got a kidney complaint, or I've got this, or I've got diabetes, and I'm having, people understand. Mm. So I was publicly saying, we've got to change the stigma, break down the taboo, but privately, and I was there all the time and dealing with it. And that's where I, and bearing in mind, I was in my late 30s. Mm. I'd never been someone who had succumbed to drugs early in my life. I just didn't have the desire. I didn't have the interest. I knew the dangers of them. And somebody said, if you have this, it will make you feel better. And I did. And it did for 40 minutes. But it made me feel normal. It didn't make me feel happy or amazing. It made me feel a bit more normal. And that was the very slippery slope of that for me. And then I was chasing it, and then it ruined my life. And I couldn't get off the treadmill because I was terrified of the come down. So I'd have to drink again and do this again. And I mean, I'm talking to 2 alcoholics, so you know exactly where I'm coming from. And it was horrendous. And it's been interesting doing the book because I've had to revisit many, many, many dark places, how this unwelcome visitor has ruined so many times in my life. And yet I still look back on my life as being a good life. So it's about how to, I think in sobriety, I'm so grateful for normality. Mm. I'm not looking to be happy anymore. Happy is something that depression depresses everything. That's why it's called that, I imagine. So therefore, you're not able to. That's why I say to people, I read a lot of things about depression and people say, if you feel sad, it's like, no, I want to be able to feel sad. Depression depresses every single
emotion.
You want to
be able to feel something.
You can't feel anything. Yeah. I can't feel happy or sad or jealous or angry, or I can't feel any of those things. It takes away the feeling. So it's not about now me wanting to feel happy. I just want to feel normal. I want to feel in control of those emotions. And of course, the depression and the alcohol and everything was just masking it. And it was, and of course, I had a lot of, I don't blame anybody for my behaviours, but there are reasons for it. And I was also surrounded by a lot of enablers, you know, people who yeah, here's Dan. She's the party animal. Da, da, da. And it gave me an excuse to hide behind. Well, I don't have a problem. Mm. I mean, who says you can't be in your late 40s and go out and get pissed? And who says you can't? And I'd then go on to Loose Women. So before the press could say she was found falling out of a nightclub, I'd go on and say I was found falling out of a nightclub. Mm. Of course, I now realise as well, because of the hacking, a lot of the stuff I just thought I was really unfortunate, why everything I did was played out in the public eye. Of course, I know now there was another reason. And that also added to it, because I went through a period where, again, my own, I drank the alcohol, but I didn't trust anybody. So I was living in a world where anybody who did suffer from the hacking process was also never didn't trust anybody. So I lost trust in my friends. I lost trust in a couple of my family members because there was stuff that only they knew. Yeah. And it was a very lonely, dark time. Mm. And that was another reason. Again, they're reasons, but they're not excuses.
No.
They are reasons. And you've described that kind of whirlwind as probably even an understatement. But when you're in that cyclone or that kind of... And you know it's going on and you don't really want to be doing it. There's a little bit of you wants to do it. And you're just watching the show, aren't
watching
you, in
show.
A way that we kind of... And yet there's no break. You can't reach for a break. There isn't a break. There's no kind of way to slow it down. So how did yours slow down? How did yours... Who was that? Who were they... Or was it an internal thing that's...
I would love to say
that... Hang on, this has got to slow down. This has got to stop.
I was aware that my life was in free fall, but I think that, and my ex-husband Tim, who I'm friends with, would agree that I think we self-medicated our marriage for a lot of years. Because there's no handbook on how long you should stay married. We had two children and we thought that's what you did. And I didn't step back enough and think, I'm self-medicating my marriage. We should maybe consider splitting up. We didn't do that. We used alcohol to be together and stay together. And the house was a bit rock and roll, you know. My son was forming a band. The house was full of people. It was a, you know, well, we live in a creative rock and roll house.
Bohemian,
you know,
life.
Kind of stuff. And I mean, you know, Matty's admitted the 1975 wouldn't exist because now Lincoln and I like to watch crime and go to bed at 10 o'clock with a crumpet. So we wouldn't have had these teenagers play music till three in the morning in the garage. Wouldn't have happened. But what did happen was 10 years ago, I was out partying in London. I mean, bearing in mind, my children were always massively looked after and cared for, and I was a great mom in many, many ways. This was happening when I was away on my own. And I went out one night. I went to Soho House with my friend Matt Evers that I was in Dancing on Ice with. And I was like, people used to call me the Pied Piper. And I would start the evening with two or three people. And then by the end of the night, it was like, me with a penny whistle walking down the road with 24 people behind. And I remember I'd been invited to an after party at the Brits. I had no connections with the Brits at all. Obviously, you know, Matty does now, but I didn't. So I don't know why I was invited to this after party. Anyway, I arrived with my collected entourage of 24 Pied Piper friends, and probably four of them I knew properly, and went to the, you know, hi, Denise Welsh, I'm on the guest list. And they went, no, you're on the guest list, Denise, but your 22 other friends aren't. Right then, well, we'll just go somewhere else then. And I put my hand up and called these taxis. And I went to this nightclub called Jet Black. And this nightclub didn't open till 4 in the morning. And at 6 o'clock, I remember, 6 a.m., I remember a friend of mine, Noel, who was this sort of very beautiful model. And I remember him saying, hi, Denise, this is Lincoln from Stringfellows. And he's now my husband.
Wow.
And I don't think there's many people who could meet at 6 o'clock in Jet Black and still be now sober. We both met in the madness, as we called it. And he was functioning, alcoholic, the same, running, living in a very nocturnal world, being the PR and marketing manager for Stringfellows. So his partying didn't start till the club finished. So then he was out 2-3, and he said that his friends would wait for him and they'd go, "Here's Lincoln, let's get the needle on red," is what they used to say. And he was the party guy. He'd turn up with the girls and da-ba-da-ba-da. And so we kind of functioned as people who saw each other now and again. My marriage was over, but the public didn't know my marriage was over. But of course, yet again, the press portrayed me as the adulteress. And
of course,
Tim was long-suffering Tim and I was the adulteress. And this is all that happened. I decided, Lincoln and I became closer, but we realised very quickly that amidst all of this horrible stuff of people selling stories on us, an ex-manager of mine turned out to be someone that was selling stories, and it was a pretty horrendous time. But somehow we managed to forge this very close bond. But we knew that every time we drank, we were ruining what it was potentially a great relationship.
You knew that, you think, at the time?
Well, I knew that I was really falling for this person.
Mm.
You know, I knew that I was. But also, because we both drank, any argument we had, and I look at my friends now, John, and I see the same pattern. Any argument that we had was always to do with alcohol. And we had this one night where we had this humdinger of a row, and I said, "I'm not doing this anymore. I don't like you, that person that I saw last night." And he knew that I was serious about ending it at that point. And he never had a drink from that day on.
Wow.
Wowee.
I did not have, in my opinion then, as much of a problem as Lincoln did. I was doing a play. I was doing Steel Magnolias. And I had the ability to not drink more than a couple of beers after the show, which I did have. It's not like every single... do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was doing a play. And this particular night, we were doing the show at Richmond, and it was the nearest we would come to London. So we all said, let's create a bit of a buzz for the rest of the tour and invite a few of our celebrity friends down. And it was hilarious because Isla Blair invited Derek Jacobi, and I had Nanny Pat from The Only Way is Essex. And we had this great buzzy night that was happening. So I did the show, knowing I had two shows the next day. And I said to Lincoln, if I start getting drunk, will you just tell me, because I've got two shows tomorrow? And he said, yeah, of course. Fast forward to, darling, I'm just saying the Paps are taking pictures through the window. And I know your friend is gay that you're snogging over there for a joke, but they don't. So I'm just saying, me, don't you tell me what to do. Usual. And it was the most horrendous thing. I woke up the next morning in Lincoln's flat in Kensington. Lincoln had videoed me, and it was horrendous. I had no recollection of anything. I woke up to a photo in the newspaper of me reaching over a car, screaming. I mean, it was awful. And I could see by the look in Lincoln's eyes, he said, I'm going to come and pick you up at the theatre tonight, and I'm going to drive you back, and I don't want you to say one word. And he drove me back from Richmond to Kensington, which took quite a long time. And he just basically told me how much he loved me, how much I meant to him, how he felt that this was something special, but it couldn't go on like this. You know, he was saying, even if you just cut down. And I just thought to myself, I can't let him be a person who he doesn't know who is going to come through that door. And I made a decision that night, and I haven't drunk since.
That's amazing. So did you initially, was the initial thing to stop for him?
I guess I desperately wanted to stop being... I mean, the next day when I woke up and I had to go and do two shows, Finty, you know what it's like with a bit of a hangover.
Yeah.
We've all been there in the theatre, if we're honest. We've all had a bit of a hangover when you've got to do a show. We're actors, for God's sake. It was horrendous. But what would happen is, it wasn't just me being hungover. It was the depression coming on.
Mm.
The horrible feeling of... And my depression was so bad that my hands would lock, you know, with the anxiety and stuff like this. It was pretty horrendous. And I knew that something had to stop. And I knew then that I was going to lose Lincoln. And I just wish that I'd found that strength. to do it for some other reason. Mm. But I think I was so unhappy for so many other reasons. And people have said to me, you know, you've got to stop looking and questioning why you didn't do it before, because that's what was your catalyst. That's what made you stop. Mm. And I'm not religious at all, but I thank the universe or whatever for that happening, because I feel like I've almost been born again in my 50s. And so that's why I try to be, if I can inspire anybody, it's to say it's never too late to turn your life around. Because I know a lot of people I speak to, especially women, who say, but I've made my bed, I've got to lie in it, I'm in my 50s now, and I go, you can change it around. Mm. You know, and I was lucky I had Lincoln as an anchor, but I wish someone had talked to me about finding another anchor. I didn't really go to therapy during those days, and I wish I had, John.
What would have, do you think would have
made? I just think they would have maybe helped me find another anchor. I think they would have pinpointed that I wasn't just masking my depression, that I was masking a lot of other other unhappiness at the time.
Mm. You feel quite strongly, don't you, about this sort of common trend of people saying, oh, I'm depressed. I'm suffering from depression because I don't enjoy my job, or
the fence blew over in the wind.
The fence blew over, or
and I think, and also what I don't ever want to do is to own depression, as if, you know, well, yours isn't as bad as mine. And there was an example that once, which to me explains how I feel. There was a lovely actress called Terry Dwyer many years ago who would be sometimes on Loose Women. I'm talking 15 years ago. And we were talking in the pre-meeting about this, and I said, oh, Terry, can we talk about it on screen? Because sometimes you dilute it if you talk about it too much before. It's quite nice to have the debate on live television. And her dad was dying, had a severe terminal illness, and she was very, very, very low. And she said to me, I don't understand, Denise. She said, what's to say that your depression is worse than my depression? Because I'm really depressed because my dad is dying. And I said, if you went home tonight and someone said, we've just found the cure for your dad, if he takes this pill, by tomorrow he'll start getting better, would your depression lift? And she said, well, of course it would. And I said, well, mine wouldn't. Mm. That's the difference. Mm-hmm. I said, if I'm depressed and someone comes to my front door and says, you've won 85 million on the lottery, if that was something that would make you happy, you've won 85 million or your whole family have been wiped out in an aircraft disaster, it would be nothing. It robs you of the ability to love. And I said, so I'm not saying that you shouldn't be absolutely desperately, desperately unhappy and sad and traumatized and grief-stricken that your dad's dying, but you're not clinically depressed. That can bring on a clinical depression, but it's also people are... there's a lot of talk in the media about people hijacking it. And I don't want to say to stop the conversation, but I think we do use the word as in, well, I've just lost my job. I'm depressed. Some people will get depressed as a result of that. But the way they're saying it is just because they're really upset that they've lost it. And I think it's defining what the illness is and what we all feel as a normal state of anger and grief and, you know, fed upness and... So, because I don't want it to stop the conversation. I don't want people to now start, you know, we had such a stigma that now people are going, oh, not mental illness again, because we must keep this conversation going. Mm-hmm. And we must now hope that there are things that have happened recently that become a watershed as regards how the media talk about this illness. Mm-hmm. It started with Bonkers Bruno many years ago in The Sun. And I'm an ambassador for Mind. And we were talking to the media about how they described this illness. And sadly, the pressure on people hasn't changed within the media, and we really must do something about. But it has to be some kind of legislation. But it does really upset me how they deal with it.
It also upsets me the way people make themselves, dare I say it, sort of fashionable by saying, "Oh well, you know, I gave up drinking 2 years ago," and or "No, I'm so depressed at the moment." Or it seems to be like a sort of
buzzword
to make
yeah.
people fashionable and sparkly. And
I mean, giving up drinking, you know, I've become, I say I'm not the drink police, but I kind of have become a little bit of the drink police. And, you know, people say to me, and I'm sure that you do to you guys all the time, do you have a problem being around alcohol? Do you mind if we drink? And it's like, do you know something? We're around alcohol every minute of the day in every supermarket we go into. It has never been a problem and isn't with me. I just can't stand drunk people. of which I was one. I cannot be around. I love being around my friends who drink, but I can leave. As long as I can leave, they can fill their boots. But I've noticed with my friends and with a lot of people in my life, they have these great relationships until they drink. Mm. They also think that they're doing themselves a favour, this thing of, but I don't have a problem because I don't drink in the week. Yeah, but you then have complete blackouts at the weekend. You're powerless over it whenever you drink. I didn't have to drink every night. I didn't drink in the day. I wasn't a day drinker. The only way I drank in the day is if that was still the night before. But, you know, I think that drink is, my favourite quote is, alcohol is the only drug we have to apologise for not taking.
So true.
Isn't it?
It is.
And it's one of the most serious drugs. Most crime is related to alcohol. Most arguments that people have are related to alcohol. And I have become, I say, I'm not the drink police, but I am a little bit. I'm also aware of my friends who I love dearly, but who will say, I don't know why I feel a bit shit today. I only had two glasses last night. And I think, no, you didn't. You had a bottle. You know, again, that's up to them. But we do kid ourselves, even people who I wouldn't say have a problem or are an alcoholic. I think it's just, I think sobriety is just a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
On which point we have to stop.
Oh, no!
Which is just soul-destroying.
I've felt in such a safe place that I feel I've never shut up.
You've been brilliant.
You're amazing.
No, listen, we've covered it. We've covered so much of depression, being a mother, being a performer. And now, you know, for me, Vince, I don't know about you, is when people stop being a victim, it wasn't fair, I couldn't do this, I couldn't, to saying, I need to take responsibility for my condition.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not, of course there may have been things that contributed to
why Well, there were reasons, but they're not excuses.
Mm. They're not excuses. And that comes across really
perfectly
strongly today. And I think that's, again, hopefully a message that people will pick up, which is, it is okay to come out of the shame. It is
okay
to come out.
Shame's a funny thing, isn't it? Because I think everybody has guilt, but those of us who drank like that have a lot of shame. And that's something that only we can come to terms with.
Yeah. Which is why, you know, I thank you again for your honesty, your openness on social media, on television, in magazines. I genuinely, I think you're a warrior amongst women.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. I did feel in a very safe place. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you've enjoyed listening to us, please subscribe. And if you would really like to, it would be amazing if you could leave us a 5-star review, because it would really help us and we would be very, very grateful.
Very grateful. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Denise.
Thank you.